This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the international LGBTI news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
It is indeed Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. I'm Matt. I'm joined in the studio by Paul.
Hello.
Tom is here.
Hello.
And Dean as well.
G'day, Matt. Good
Happy
to have you.
New Year,
Happy
everybody.
New Year. Good to have you back.
Or maybe not. Well, the new year I'm talking, not about me, but just before Christmas, the leaders of LGBT rights organisations around the world converged on Bangkok for the ILGA World Conference. 700 delegates, 100 countries, and they were looking at discussing the way forward in LGBTI rights.
And they asked, what are supportive religious leaders saying to influence their flocks towards inclusiveness?
How did some of the Pacific Island nations inspire those at the conference?
And what did the United Nations' new independent expert on sexual orientation and gender identity have to say to the world's LGBTI leaders? Giving us insight into the world's biggest LGBTI rights conference, tonight we speak to André Duplessis, UN Program and Advocacy Manager for ILGA, the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association. We also took the opportunity to ask André what he sees are the big issues ahead in 2017 for LGBTI rights around the world, and his answer might surprise you. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
You don't know whether this is going to be a quiet diplomatic person who's going to come in and give a quiet diplomatic speech, but actually he came in really with a lot of energy and laid out some of his plans, which he sees over the next 3 to 6 years of how he's going to like operate in this new independent expert role. And he was fired up. Like a lot of people were saying, like, he's like a firecracker.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
So we're starting off with some good news from the USA, and it's intersex news, which we don't cover anywhere near as much as we should.
And a bit hard to find too, actually.
Yeah, it's a bit under, I have to say, out of the
underrepresented.
Five. Yes, out of the five letters, the I is the one that gets left off the most. So New York City has issued the first known birth certificate to list intersex rather than male or female last week to Californian Sarah Kelly Keenan. At 55, Sarah, who uses the pronoun she, finally has an accurate birth certificate, and it's believed to be the first one in the nation that says intersex in the gender field.
That's a long time to wait, 55 years.
Yeah, look, in September she became the second person in the country to legally change her gender to non-binary. She applied for the gender change after another person successfully argued that gender change laws that allow trans people to legally change their gender should also apply to people who don't identify as male or female. The New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene issued Keenan a new birth certificate after she provided medical documentation. Now, the intersex advocacy group Interact believes that her intersex birth certificate is the first issued in the United States, and they know of one that has been reissued to say hermaphrodite and several others that do not have a sex specified. Trying to get intersex or non-binary printed on their driver's licenses and passports is the next step for her, although passports will involve the State Department.
It's a real process, isn't it, to not just wade through bureaucracy, but to challenge what is there and what they're presenting on that form. You know, I've got to change a form. What?
Absolutely. Challenging perceived norms, very much so.
Another piece of good news. India has the first ever transgender school has opened its door. The transgender school in the city of Kochi in Kerala is the first of its kind. The school opened its doors on Friday and aims to help transgender adults aged 25 to 50 who dropped out of school to finish their education. Currently it has 6 students, but it's hoping to get up to 10.
Interesting that the teachers and the trainers at the school are also trans.
The state of Kerala was the first in India to adopt a transgender policy against discrimination, and government hospitals also offer free gender reassignment surgery. And although that the state is very open, trans students do still face discrimination from family, unfortunately, and friends, which leads to a high number of dropouts. School officials report that the state has 25,000 trans people, and 57% of them have been forced to drop out of the school due to stigma.
Wow, that's a figure that you, a theme that you don't hear spoken about very often at all. And I guess giving people that second chance to come back and relearn their, or finish their education, basically, is a great, great initiative.
Well, if this first school is successful, there will be others, and it will be introduced across India. So in 2014, the Supreme Court ruled that India's estimated 2 million transgender people have equal rights under the law.
Across to the Philippines now, where after nearly two decades, a bill seeking to protect LGBTI community members from hate crimes and discrimination has finally reached the Senate. Now, don't applaud too loud. It's not there yet, but it's just getting closer. This will be a historic first when it gets through, and Senator Riza Hantiveros has been sponsoring and pushing this bill, basically off the back of a slain Filipina transgender person, Jennifer Loud, who really raised this issue to the national agenda. So if passed, it would ensure that stigma and hate would not hinder LGBTIs from accessing things like education and healthcare and employment and other really basic rights.
Now, the bill was first filed in 2000, the year 2000, yeah, by a senator who has since died.
Oh.
They filed similar measures in 2004, didn't get anywhere. They refiled them in the 14th Congress. Bills only reached the committee level. More senators filed similar measures in the 15th and 16th Congresses. No luck at all.
They're not giving in, though. They're not giving in. To give you a bit of an idea, so there's all sorts of penalties, as in fines, and even some imprisonment if you breach some of these things. But they're looking at everything from if you refuse admission or expelling a person from education or training on the basis of their sexuality, if you're looking at revoking some sort of accreditation that they might have or formal recognition, any of those sorts of discriminations that this law will apply protections from.
More news from Taiwan this week. The Ministry of Health and Welfare has published a draft regulation to ban so-called gay conversion therapy. Regulation would outlaw the use of conversion therapy to change a person's gender identity or sexual orientation. For 30 days following the draft regulation's publication, the Taiwanese people are able to offer their opinions. After that consultation period, the government will issue a regulation taking those opinions into account. This regulation would be added to the Physicians Act, which covers medical professionals who engage in banned treatments and appropriate fines and suspensions. The regulation seemed to have a good chance of success. Taiwan is perhaps the most pro-gay country in Southeast Asia, with enormous public support for marriage equality and a president who has spoken in favour of LGBTI rights for years.
And in brief, in the USA, a new study has revealed that LGBT people are disproportionately more likely to end up in prison.
Vietnam is taking steps to legally recognise trans people by allowing people who have undergone gender reassignment to register under their new gender.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hola, mi nombre es Félix de Colombia. You are on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
And that was Ricky Lee with A Brand New Day and A Brand New Year.
Oh, and all these happy songs focusing on the year ahead, and happiness is flowing through on the SMSs. Happy New Year with endless exclamation marks from 317. Thank you very much. Sam is on the beach being informed as always. Thank you, Sam. And long-distance listeners, great program. We're all listening from Albury, Graham, Wayne, Yumi and Manuel. And they're a part of the We Love Gordon fan club. Now, Gordon's not here tonight, so we'll send him your best wishes.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
We're talking all things from the ILGA World Conference held just before Christmas in Bangkok. And one of the key people that attended was the new position of the United Nations SOGI expert, sexual orientation and gender identity. And this has been quite a controversial position. So it was voted through the United Nations Human Rights Council from 30 June last year. Fairly close vote, about 10 to 12 votes in it. everybody thought, yes, this is great, this is groundbreaking stuff.
Well, not everyone.
Well, not everyone, that's very true, because there have been lots of other follow-ups to that. But basically, the role is mandated to appoint this independent expert whose role is to advise the UN and keep an eye on the interests and remove discrimination based on a sexual orientation and gender identity.
Well, picking up the point from Dean, there were 23 in favour, 18 against, and 6 abstained.
Yeah,
that's so pretty close.
It is far too close, one would think. And this actually came off the back of a whole lot of non-government organisations, 628 NGOs from around the world, who advocated to get this through. There was a very big push around social media and all the various LGBTI and human rights organisations to make this happen. However, and then we should say, actually, the role was actually appointed, an international law professor from Thailand, which is Vitit Muntaborn, was appointed on the 30th of September for initially a three-year period and then an option for a further three. However, since then, there have been two attempts to get rid of the position, really, to go back on it. So there was one in November where a block of voting countries led by Botswana, mainly African countries.
Yes, all the usual suspects.
All the usual suspects tried to stop the role there. And then another one right before Christmas where they were trying to block the money that would fund the role. So they're sort of trying all these different angles.
Maybe we should run a competition with our listeners and see if they can name the name the countries. Wouldn't be that difficult if they're a regular listener to this program.
That's very true. Interesting, Paul, you picked up on the number of abstentions. So even in this most recent vote, 84 for, 77 against, and 16 abstentions. So if those abstentions went one way or the other,
it could
really
wrong way, yes,
influence the vote. That gives you a bit of a wrap-up of where this position has come from. And our guest tonight is going to tell us a little bit more about the role and what it will actually mean for the rights of LGBTI people around the world.
This is Hussein Alizadeh, covering the Middle East for the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission on the World Wide Web.
To better understand what is happening at the United Nations, we spoke to André Duplessis. He's the UN Program and Advocacy Manager for ILGA, the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association. Even since we spoke to André, there's been a third attempt to attack this role of UN independent SOGI expert, and this was the budgetary one right before Christmas that tried to defund the position. That has failed also. We asked André why there has been such a strong and concerted push by some countries to abolish the role of SOGI independent expert.
Wow, where do you even start with a question like that? I just think we're seeing a lot of stuff happening. One, I think, is just deep-seated fears by a bunch of African and Asian countries, which really feel that they are going to see same-sex marriage and same-sex adoption imposed on them by the West. That's at least what they're telling us. Might be some of the fears behind it, but we also just think there's just like a general reluctance to talk about anything related to sexuality or queerness, which they just don't want to. It's like putting your fingers in your ears and saying, don't talk, don't talk.
The vote was actually quite close, and there were a lot of abstentions in there. Is that of some concern to you?
Actually, it's funny, like abstentions, like sometimes I love abstentions, sometimes I hate abstentions. Actually, I think a lot of the abstentions in there were ones that we couldn't get a vote going our way, but governments were persuaded to say, okay, well, we're not going to vote against you. So an abstention actually works in our favour, because in the UN you don't need to get more than 50%. You just need to get more saying yes than no in order for something to pass. So if someone drops out of the vote, it actually can help us. The issue about it, of course, there are countries where we wish that they would be saying something and they will continue to abstain. I think we've seen countries like India, for example, is one where we feel that their message of abstention at the moment is kind of a not yet message. You know, they're going through a lot of national law revisions, which means that it's difficult for them to be seen to be openly LGBTI-friendly at the moment. But it's kind of like a holding a space, you know, maybe not now, but we understand that this is an evolving space and in the future we might be able to. That's how we read a lot of the abstentions.
Now, the role they were trying to get rid of is the UN Independent Expert on Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity, Professor Vatit Muntarbhorn, and he was the keynote speaker at the ILGA World Conference recently. And from everything I've read, he made a very inspiring start to the conference. Can you tell us a bit about what he said?
It was really inspiring. I think some of us didn't really know what to expect. You don't know whether this is going to be a quiet diplomatic person who's going to come in and give a quiet diplomatic speech. But actually, he came in really with a lot of energy and laid out some of his plans, which he sees over the next 3 to 6 years, of how he's going to like operate in this new independent expert role. And he was fired up. Like a lot of people were saying, like he's like a firecracker. Like he had some great energy, great wisdom and energy at the same time, which just was really inspiring and a great way for us to kick off the conference. I mean, he did set out his 5 points, which kind of underlie what he's going to be doing is focusing on decriminalization. And that's not just about same-sex criminalization, but also some of the criminalizing laws that are in place that affect gender-diverse people as well, for example. He mentioned depathologization, you know, changing the way that we're classified medically or even getting rid of the medicalization, particularly for trans and intersex identities and how that affects us. Status recognition, again, not just relationship status recognition he talked about, but he also talked about gender identity. He talked about gender-diverse cultural inclusion, which we got really excited about. And he also talked about empathization and really trying to understand and enter into the mind of the other, which I think is something we're seeing in the world generally at the moment as a general reluctance for us to try and understand people who are different from ourselves. So we were really excited with what he said, and there were a lot of claps, a lot of cheers, and some great conversations with Martin.
Andre Duplessis from ILGA outlining the opening address to the ILGA World Conference recently by the UN SOGI independent expert, Professor Vita Muntarbhorn. Coming up, we hear more about the topics of the conference and what lies ahead for 2017. You're on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Buenos dias, soy Matthew Mitchum y estáis escuchando a Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Katie May, proud crossdresser and author of the book Men Can Wear Dresses Too, speaking from London on the Worldwide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time, and another message in. Best wishes to Douglas and Peter from Melbourne, who are now Australian citizens. Thanks, Sam. And yes, Douglas, who's a friend of the show as well. Happy Aussie Citizenship Day. Have a Leamington and a snag on the barbie, something like that.
I hope his tree lasted longer than mine did. We've been talking to Andre Duplessis. None of the 5 issues outlined by the UN SOGI independent expert, Professor Vita Muntarbhorn, are easy to achieve. We asked Andre from ILGA if he felt this might be too big for one person.
Well, he's not the only person working on it, which is good. I mean, when I say on it, I mean at the United Nations or internationally. I mean, he's one piece of what's happening at the UN and elsewhere. You know, his role is going to be very intense. I mean, it's going to be a huge amount of work that he's going to be involved in. But he's standing on the shoulders of giants. And this position that's set up, you know, he's going to be working in it for 3 to 6 years, and then it will be filled by someone who will follow on from him. So we feel that if he's setting the right tone, we don't necessarily think that he's not our savior. He's not going to be answering all our questions, but we think that he will certainly be able to make some kind of good directional shift and really set a good tone in the UN at the moment.
And he certainly set a good tone for the conference. Tell us a bit more about the conference themes and what was discussed at the ILGA World Conference.
Actually, this was the first time that we decided not to actually have an actual theme. Usually in the past, we've had a kind of a conference title, and this time we realized that the global LGBTI movement has really grown to such a point that to try and channel all of our thinking and energy into one phrase was not doing us justice. So this was the first time we actually kind of opened the door and let people bring their stories and bring their messaging to the conference. And I think that was really wonderful. We had about 700 people there at the conference from over 100 countries around the world. Took place over 5 days. We had some pre-conferences on some kind of crucial issues that people had pre-identified, such as education, health, LGBTI persons, and faith, which was a really interesting one. And also, crucially, we had the identity pre-conferences. For the first time ever, we had a bisexual pre-conference. I think it's something about the opening up and the visibility of bisexuals within the movement is something that's now being reflected at our conferences, and we're just really excited to see that too.
Interestingly, we've just got a bisexual show here on Joy, so there is definitely a much greater visibility going on.
Oh, it's wonderful. That's so great.
And now you mentioned faith-based leaders being involved there, or a topic on faith-based issues. It seems to be the issue of faith is both part of the problem but also part of the solution. What did the discussions at the conference lead us to look towards?
Well, I think exactly that point. So often religion is the enemy. They are the ones who are preaching from the pulpit fire and brimstone. And they're the people who are influencing governments. And in fact, we saw that just in the vote in the UN yesterday, where it became very clear that the Holy See, for example, was talking with and trying to influence government. So absolutely, we can see the link where religion is actually stopping the enjoyment of human rights of LGBTI persons. But exactly as you said, actually, when it gets down to it, faith is about loving your neighbor as yourself. You know, right at the core of all the world's religions, we just see this teaching of humility and love and openness and inclusion. And we just find that when in the conference, this was some of the discussions, like, how do we actually dig deep into the roots of people's faith, people's spirituality, and use that messaging to kind of bring that out of the open, to come out as not just queer people of faith, but people of faith who want to be inclusive of queerness. So there were discussions at the conference about how can we do that better and how can we make sure that those voices are being heard in the international political spaces, so that it's not just the Holy See telling governments to try and vote against the LGBTI independent expert, but actually that there will be voices of faith saying, no, we need to open our doors and we need to include others.
Another topic that I saw on the program revolved around engagement with the tourism and hospitality industries. That seemed a little bit different, caught me by surprise, I guess. Did you come across what those discussions were talking about?
I was not very much involved in those discussions. I did have a little chat with one person who I know was very much involved there. I think some of it was touching on that as we travel, it's like the pink dollar, we have that power to influence where we go. And I think some of it was about making sure that as we travel, we do so sensitively and understand local communities that we're entering into, that queer tourism is not just about, rocking up at a beautiful beach vacation in a difficult place, but having some sensitivity about what are the needs of the local queer population in that country.
Now, I'm sure with that many people there at the conference, you would have come across a lot of very inspiring individuals and indeed countries doing great things in their own way towards LGBT rights. Were there any that stand out in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think even from, your own region, to see some of the work that's happening down in the Pacific, Aotearoa, New Zealand as well, some deep work on Indigenous identities within the Pacific, on some of the Indigenous trans identities there, and some of the joy that literally brings to the conversation. I think so often conversations are agonized about gender identity and how can we try and get, legal gender recognition, and then to repaint some of the conversations that we see are happening in the Pacific to say, we are, from these islands, this is part of our culture, as a way to reinvent and repaint themselves. And that, for me, that was so inspiring for the rest of the world to kind of see how that was playing out.
André Duplessis from ILGA speaking with us from Switzerland.
It gives a really good taste of this conference. So it is the biggest LGBTI rights conference in the world. I actually caught up when I was in Sydney over Christmas with somebody that went to the conference, and they, just at the how was the conference? They burst into this, that you could feel the excitement and the intensity, and so really great things have undoubtedly come out of it, which is exciting. We've got more coming up from André about what he sees as the year ahead. Perhaps it's not quite as positive, but interesting nonetheless.
Does he touch on where he thinks with the new head of the UN, whether that will be a factor? I mean, we've been quite supportive the last two have been quite supportive.
Ban Ki-moon particularly has been not just supportive, but quite outspoken. Mm. And when you have that support at the top and you get these close votes, a word from the boss can sometimes sway people.
Yes. I mean, it's a bit of a shame that such a possibly forward-thinking organisation didn't actually put a woman in charge for a change.
Yeah, look, it's a political organisation though, isn't it? So
yes,
America wasn't able to do it. United Nations, yeah, it's still that that glass ceiling is still there.
But New Zealand did it quite easily, and Helen Clark was actually one of the candidates.
Indeed. And look, the new UN Secretary General is from Portugal. Portugal's fairly liberal in terms of their LGBTI rights.
So Antonio Guterres.
I would hope that he is therefore equally supportive. Time will tell.
Fingers crossed.
Time will tell. We were talking before about this constant push to oust the UN SOGI expert. I want to touch on, Andre was talking about some of the things that he'd outlined as his vision, his priorities coming forward. Decriminalisation, that's probably not a new one and kind of makes sense. There's still about between 77 and 80 countries around the world that particularly criminalise homosexuality. Some of them don't enact, they don't
so
punish.
Why don't they take it off then?
Indeed. But we have also heard from some which have tried to, if you like, equalise by bringing in criminalisation for women who have sex with women. Lesbian sex. So under the old the British sodomy laws, it wasn't a problem for women to have sex because the Queen didn't think that could happen.
No.
Now we're seeing some countries who are calling equality by bringing in that sort of law. So the decriminalisation space certainly there, and I guess I would expect that from him. There's a couple of others which really stood out to me. Depathologisation. So this is basically clearing up that being gay or lesbian is not a medical disease, a medical problem, has no derivative in that area. And that's probably more of a challenging one.
Yeah, especially in Indonesia where they've just reintroduced it, apparently.
That's right. So their psychological organisation has just redefined homosexuality as an illness.
Look, the reality is that as LGBTI people gain more rights in very prominent countries that get a lot of attention, like the United States, other countries, and even, of course, in the United States, there will be a lot more pushback.
Are we certain what's going to happen in the United States given the change in leadership that's happening there?
I think the problem is that once you've brought... The problem for homophobes in the United States, and they know this, is that once you've had a cultural change, as they have, even before marriage equality went through the Supreme Court of the United States, the reality is there was a cultural change. And no longer, for many people, are LGBT people seen as, you know, freaks or perverts or anything like that. And once that there's been that cultural change, it's difficult to bring it back. It's as simple as that.
Equally, it's difficult to bring that cultural change. So I think there was a story later part of last year in China where a student studying a medical course was trying to take the government to court because the textbooks, you know, they were portraying homosexuality as something bad and an illness and all that. And
outdated. Yeah, because, I mean, in China they only took it off the psychiatric register of mental illnesses about 10 years ago. So the textbooks were outdated and pretty offensive by our standards.
One of the other things he was talking about was status recognition, and we're not talking here about same-sex marriage. We're talking about recognising whatever gender identity you are, which is really positive. Andre did talk briefly there too about the fear of some countries around same-sex marriage. One of the reasons they're fighting these things is that they're seeing same-sex marriage a bit of momentum around the world, and they think, well, if they support anything to do with gays or lesbians, then it will lead to same-sex marriage, and therefore they're putting up the walls straight away. Do you think we're making a rod for our own back by pushing for same-sex marriage?
We've talked on the show quite a few times, especially with our, stakeholders to an extent like Kaleidoscope Australia, about how, in many respects, aiming for anti-discrimination legislation is preferable to same-sex marriage or marriage equality. But the reality is that these things have their own momentum, and you don't necessarily get to pick and choose which gains you actually have.
Now, at the moment, the popular vote is for same-sex marriage,
Absolutely. I mean, there could technically be other issues that are more relevant to, say, the transgender community than access to bathrooms, but that's what's got all the attention at the moment. So you grab that baton and you run with it.
Now, 2017, could it be a world of opportunity for us? We will ask that question of Andre in just a few moments.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Costa Gavrielidis, the president of Accept LGBT Cyprus, and you're on the Worldwide Wave.
A few more messages coming in. What exciting guests will you have on this year? Any surprises? 317 asks.
Yes, it's you.
actually, we've got a heap. Next week, where we've actually recorded it just before the show tonight, we've got a fascinating show. We've got a few themed shows around the Midsummer Festival, and one of them is on Germany and this really amazing story of Charlotta van Malsdorf, who was a trans pioneer and quite outspoken, who lived through the Nazi era and then through East Germany's communism era, survived, thrived. You know, it's one of those amazing stories. So it's a part of the Midsummer Festival. We've also got a call out to Panty Bliss in Ireland. We are going to chase down Vitit Montalban, who we've been talking about tonight, the UN SOGI expert. Now, Dean, you're chasing one out of Lebanon.
Lebanon, yes, an organisation called Proud Lebanon, who are aiming to, I suppose, develop a dialogue for LGBT rights in that country, where the people are apparently a lot more liberal than the government are.
And I've also tracked down a group that is a group of Iraqi queers. Now, that's going to be interesting. So, yes, we have a heap and we won't stop. We've done 140-odd countries. We're not done yet. So stay tuned every week here on Worldwide Wave.
Joy 94.9.
Tonight we are talking all things the ILGA World Conference. It's a new year. It's full of issues and opportunities for LGBTI people around the globe. Our guest, Andre Duplessis from ILGA, we asked him what he sees as the big points of focus for LGBTI rights in 2017.
Well, I think what we're seeing, I don't know if I'm the only person who's feeling this, but at the end of 2016, I'm just opening up my news browser and just kind of being horrified almost day after day with some of what's going on around the world in multiple different places. And actually, that means LGBTI doesn't sit in an island away from all of this. And when I look at, yes, of course, the election in the U.S., but what's happened in Europe and in the Philippines and in many other parts of the world, this kind of shrink to nationalism, like retreat into nationalism, retreat into fear, to closing borders, to not including, to not opening up, that is something that we are going to see playing out very much and affecting LGBTI persons as we enter into 2017. I wish I was full of excitement and hope that it's all going to be repealing after laws and wonderful freedom, but I actually think we're in for a lot of fight in 2017. And I think the other thing is that while, of course, we're always going to be a global international movement, I do feel that at the moment a lot of activism and a lot of the work that's being done has kind of retreated, necessarily so, into local communities where people are actually addressing some of the hostilities just in their own towns, villages, cities, or states. And really, I think we're going to see some of that kind of focus work at the kind of the regional or local level as people try to say, well, how do I deal with the hate that is existing in my community? At the same time, I still think we're going to see global politics playing out. I think LGBTI issues should never be a political pawn, but they will be used as a political pawn in places like the United Nations. We just want to get on with the work and just actually be able to use that system to be able to help the human rights of LGBTI persons. But actually, we know that we're going to see the geopolitics playing out where people are going to be using us and our issues to say, well, this is the liberal agenda versus the conservative agenda. So I think trying to be smart around that, not let us be politicised too much so we can actually just help the people on the ground is what we'll be focusing on.
Certainly enough there to keep you busy for next year. You did just touch on the US. I guess one of the legacies or one of the trademarks of the Obama administration has been a fairly outward support of LGBT rights, including through the State Department acting internationally. We can't really expect that to continue under Trump. So I guess what are the international implications that you think might happen in not having as vocal a supporter there in the USA?
Yeah, of course, it's been wonderful to have the Obama administration so supportive of LGBTI rights, and most of the time being very sensitive and smart on how to work internationally, knowing that it's not always a great idea to come in waving the Stars and Stripes flags in every situation. So they've been actually very sensitive on that. So we are going to miss that. That said, they're not the only government in the world that's working on LGBTI rights internationally. Actually, most of the work at the United Nations is led by a coalition of 7 Latin American countries who are going to continue working very much on this, and that's the people we turn to. And we know that institutionally, the EU and many EU countries also are very strongly committed. So thankfully, and Canada as well, Australia, many others around the world. So thankfully, we're not only reliant on the US for support. But yeah, it certainly will have a tone change, a tone shift in geopolitics, and that will affect some of what we see.
And that will make the next ILGA conference very interesting indeed, which is for the first time being held in Oceania.
I know. I'm really excited about that. It's going to be down in Aotearoa, New Zealand at the end of 2018.
And I'm going to book tickets to go across myself. André Duplessis, the UN Program and Advocacy Manager for ILGA, thank you again for your time and sharing your views on World Wide Wave.
You're more than welcome. Thanks so much.
It is certainly going to be an interesting year with all those changes, the new UN Secretary General, the changes in America. And
hang on, it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yeah. Look, even I mean, André's a pretty positive guy, but even he's saying, look, there's challenges there. What are your predictions, can I ask you, for LGBT rights?
Well, domestically, I don't think we're actually going to get anywhere, unfortunately. I think
you
it's
think
going
that
to be
political pawn thing that he was talking about is going to play out more here in Australia?
I think it's one of those cases where the politicians are way behind the population.
Still, yes, yes, very true. Dean, what about you?
Well, I think that in Asia, or in parts, I mean, Asia's obviously a huge region, but in terms of certain Asian countries like Taiwan, Vietnam, even Thailand, there's some movement for changes in legislation for trans people, which is quite a big step. I think there could be some, as we said earlier about the Philippines, anti-discrimination legislation is, if not being enacted, there's movement towards it. I think there's a perception in certain countries that we've spoken to in Asia that they've been dragging their feet for a long time now, and there's a feeling that they need to do something about for LGBT people.
I'm going to go one step further and say I reckon we're going to have the first country in Asia with same-sex marriage.
I don't think Taiwan will actually legislate same-sex marriage until the next election. I think that they'd have real trouble getting ahead on that. And that's not for another, I think, year or two. But I do agree with you that it's, I think if I had to put money on it, I'd say they're going to be the country that's going to have marriage equality.
And my other prediction, Justin Trudeau will move to Australia, take over as opposition leader, win the election and bring in same-sex marriage in Australia.
And then you wake up feeling all warm and
yeah,
stiff.
You're just dreaming.
Yeah. You're on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Samuel from Kenya on World Wide Wave.
It has been wonderful speaking with our friend there at ILGA, André Duplessis. He's the UN Program and Advocacy Manager for ILGA. You can find out more about the very good work that they do at ILGA, ILGA.org.
And a big thank you to everyone who's messaged us during the last week, and have there been a lot. On Facebook, we've had Phil, Nikolai, Marty, Trent, Virginia, Margaret, so many. And our Facebook page is W3Joy on Facebook. And thank you to everyone for all the SMSs that have come through.
Of course, we'd like to thank Mark and Damien for the podcasts.
And look, speaking of podcasts, they've been doing a ripper job to pump them out. So we have our full archive of the countries we've been to. Just recently, they've put up the one with Dennis Altman, which is a great, great show on global gays. We had Cook Islands, fascinating one on Indonesia, where there's a whole lot of issues there. Italy, we looked at Pier Paolo Pasolini and his very controversial life.
We played a bit of that last week on our clips show.
Indeed.
Yep, on our look back in 2016.
And also that new research on HIV and ageing. So it's all on our website. Go to joy.org.au/worldwide wave. And next week, as we mentioned before, off to Germany, looking at the amazing story of Charlotta van Malsdorf, which is a midsummer show called I Am My Own Wife.
And we're hoping to cover, you know, areas we might have missed in previous years. So maybe more on the Middle East. We'd love to do more in South America, but the time zone is a killer.
We'd just love to do more.
More, that's it. All for you, our lovely listeners.
Yeah, we've only done 178 countries. We've got far more to do.
That's it.
We're going to go out with another song. This time it's It Gets Better, and this is by Todrick Hall, a LGBT artist from America.
Catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now. So what you gonna do with the haters? Just gotta excuse their behavior, but just don't
give up. Oh, I just want you to know. Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.